VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk, coming your way from VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, a massive attack launched against Israel again, with hundreds of rockets fired from Hamas in Gaza. Some were intercepted by the Iron Dome system. Others caused great devastation, destroying human life and property. A so-called ceasefire has been called. Well, we're going to talk about this and other related issues today. We welcome back David Rubin, the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's in the region of Samaria, known to most of the world as the West Bank. He's a founder and president of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, which was established to heal the trauma of terror victim children after he and his three-year-old son were seriously wounded in a terror attack. He's known as a trusted voice in Israel. He is the author of multiple books, including The Islamic Tsunami, Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, and his latest title, Trump and the Jews. His websites are shilohisraelchildren.org and davidrubinisrael.com. David, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Good to be with you, Jim.
David, let's take away the censors of the news media, and if you could tell us exactly what happened, unfold for us this latest terrorist attack led by Hamas against Israel.
Well, what's happened is that there has been, over the past 24 to 48 hours, there have been over 500 rocket attacks against Israel, launched against Israel from the Gaza Strip, which is where the Hamas terrorist organization and the Islamic Jihad terrorist organizations are based and are in total control. So this has been happening, and Israel started to respond. There were various responses to those attacks, and then as a result of that, there were consultations in Israel, emergency consultations of the top brass of the military with Prime Minister Netanyahu and his defense minister, Victor Lieberman. And they pretty much gave the green light to the Israel Defense Forces to prepare a full-scale operation in Gaza. Full-scale military operation in Gaza, which is another polite way of saying a war, because that's what it would lead to. And but you know, Israel has reached the point, you know, where we just can't take it anymore. You know, you reach a point where hundreds of rockets literally are being launched on your cities. There's a point at which you fight back and put an end to it.
David, you mentioned over 500 rockets, and we know your Iron Dome system stopped some of these, but not all. What kind of devastation came from these rockets? I mean, we're talking loss of life and loss of property. I mean, a lot of devastation.
Loss of life, people wounded, and loss of property. And when that happens, it's the psychological damage is even worse, because everyone has to go run into bomb shelters several times a day. Life is disrupted. So then the cabinet, the security cabinet, had a 7-hour meeting yesterday, and it was quite the intense meeting with a lot of differences of opinion. And basically, the opinions can be simplified to two. There was the opinion of Prime Minister Netanyahu that Israel should not launch a full-scale operation in Gaza, that we should kind of just continue the tit-for-tat game and not go into the expense and the potential damage to Israel's political profile from a major operation in Gaza. And there were the two right-wing parties, that, including the defense minister, Lieberman, that took a very strong stand that Israel has to go forward with this full-scale operation, that after 3 years of intermittent rocket fire, and especially the intense rocket fire of the past couple of days, that we had reached the breaking point. And as a result of that, Netanyahu being insistent and refusing to launch the full-scale operation, the majority of the cabinet went along with him. But the defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, has resigned.
Yeah, he scheduled a press conference early this morning, didn't he?
Correct. Well, he had the press conference. He announced his resignation. It'll become official within 48 hours. Either the country will go to new elections, which will be 1 year before the end of the Netanyahu's term, and if not new elections, then there are a couple of scenarios that could play out based on the demands of the other right wing party. So we'll see what happens.
Tell us further about this resignation of the defense minister and the conflict between he and the prime minister in this regard. This had to be so strong as far as the response that he wanted Israel to fully defend herself, to settle this once and for all. The prime minister, though, seemed to capitulate in that regard. Comment further about why he's resigning. Did he feel he can no longer do good as defense minister?
Well, the conflict between the two of them wasn't very public. Netanyahu and Lieberman, the prime minister and defense minister, they have a long-standing relationship. They go back a long way. Lieberman was Netanyahu's chief of staff about 20 years ago. But he formed his own political party, which is to the right of the Likud, which is Netanyahu's party, which is the biggest party in Israel. And so Lieberman's party has generally taken a more right-wing position on a lot of these conflicts. So appointing Lieberman as defense minister a couple of years ago was actually considered a very bold move by Netanyahu, because he sort of co-opted Lieberman into his coalition as a defense minister, giving him the position that he had always sought. But when it came to Gaza, and it came to the ongoing, and I could call it, taunting of the terrorist organizations, because basically they're like bullies. They'll just keep launching those rockets, and then, and saying, okay, what are you going to do about it? It's like the bully in the schoolyard, except much more deadly. Netanyahu was willing to play that game with the terrorist organization, and he was willing to say, okay, when they say, what are you going to do about it? So he would launch a proportional strike in response. When in reality, if you want to win in war, you have to launch a disproportionate response. You have to really wipe them out. And he didn't seem to know how to do that, or didn't want to do that all along, and Lieberman has been advocating for the more aggressive approach, and the leader of the other right-wing party, the education minister, Naftali Bennett, has also been advocating for that stronger position, a more aggressive position against the Hamas terrorists. And Netanyahu hasn't gone along with it. So ultimately, the defense minister had to decide, being 1 year away from elections, does he want to take the risk of going to early elections and being true to his conscience and true to his voters, or does he want to continue being defense minister and not taking the positions that his voters want him to, and not taking the position that he truly believes in?
Help us understand the politics in Israel just a bit here, David. Who decides when elections happen? You said they maybe in a year earlier than who makes that decision? Is there not a constitution that would give guidance as to when the elections must take place?
So it's all enshrined in law that every 4 years there is an election, but it's a parliamentary system. Whereby you vote for a party and the leader of the party becomes, the leader of the largest party becomes the prime minister. But in a parliamentary system, the prime minister has to form his coalition from various parties. And there are several, there are actually five parties in the governing coalition that, from which the prime minister has made his majority in the Israeli parliament. And as a result of that, if those parties withdraw from the coalition, prime minister loses his majority in the parliament, and therefore there has to be new elections. So we're in a situation now where the prime minister is losing his majority. And there very well might be new elections because the leader of the other right wing party, aside from Lieberman's, you know, Defense Minister Lieberman's party, the leader of that party has said if Netanyahu doesn't appoint him now as defense minister instead of Lieberman, then his party is withdrawing from the coalition and thereby. The Likud, Netanyahu and his Likud party will lose their majority in the Knesset, which triggers automatically new elections.
David Rubin is with us here today. His websites are ShilohIsraelChildren.org. We'll talk more about that more in the next segment, and DavidRubinIsrael.com. And David, as we take a look at this, a ceasefire has been called. Who initiated that ceasefire?
Ceasefire was initiated by Hamas, you know, to use the proverbial bully again as an example. It's kind of like a bully approaching the weaker, gentle kid and giving him about 20 punches to the nose. And then when the kid finally gets the courage to fight back, then the bully says, okay, we're going to have a peace agreement now. No more fighting.
Yeah,
you know, and this is the situation. So they launch their 500 rockets, and then they call for a ceasefire.
My.
Before Israel starts to fight back.
Well, folks, these are the very issues that are going on right now, and we're in the next segment going to delve further into this and the response coming forth. David, I understand that the prime minister was in Paris at the time?
He was. The prime minister was in Paris. He rushed back to Israel when the fighting became very intense.
Wow. We're going to delve into this further here on Crosstalk and what our guest today expects to happen now moving forward. We'll be back in just 1 minute here on Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how long have spiders been around?
Chris, spiders have been around evidently since creation, and even now evolutionists are admitting they've been around for a long, long time. Recently, a very well-preserved fossil spider was found in rock, dated by evolutionists to be about 300 million years old. Yet it was identical to a modern-day spider, complete with 8 legs and even the intricate web-spinning features of modern spiders. The point is, Chris, there's no such thing as a simple organism. They're all complex, right from creation, with all of the abilities that we now attribute to them. Spiders may have had a different lifestyle back before the curse, but there is no such thing as simple to complex evolution, even among spiders. They were created, just like it says, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. David Rubin is with us today, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's right in the region that's known to so much of the world as the West Bank. And David has authored several books, one of which is the book Trump and the Jews, newly released book Trump and the Jews. David, give us a word about this book. What are you writing about in Trump and the Jews?
Well, I'm writing about Trump and the Jews. And, you know, it's kind of, the title almost speaks for itself. We've had a long history in the history of the Jewish people, the history of Israel, of an association with the United States. You know, ever since the beginning of the United States, there were always presidents that felt a strong attachment to Israel, whether it was biblical Israel or the Jewish people in their exile, or the modern state of Israel in its resurgence. And if you could look at presidents like George Washington, John Adams, John Quincy Adams, Abraham Lincoln, Harry Truman, all of these presidents, in their own unique ways, were closely connected with Israel. And after the difficult years of Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama, who were much more anti-Israel, now we suddenly have a president named Donald Trump, who has been very, very strongly pro-Israel and has done tremendous things for Israel. And, from the Iran nuclear deal to, destroying that danger, or at least reducing that danger of Iran getting the nuclear bomb by withdrawing from that dangerous deal, which would have given them a pathway to a nuclear bomb within a few years. Now the sanctions are back on Iran, and they're going to have a much harder time with this president to get to that point. And along with that, you have the moving of the embassy to Jerusalem, which was a bold move by President Trump, which other presidents have spoken about, but none of them has actually had the courage to accomplish. In addition to that, President Trump has also given the order to close the PLO office in Washington, D.C., which mm-hmm. has been functioning as an embassy for years, an embassy of a non-state or non-country. So, I could go on and on, but President Trump has been tremendous for Israel, for Jewish people, and I think that he deserves credit for it, and I wanted to really analyze it. I also wanted to answer the question in my book, Trump and the Jews, of why are the Jewish people in the United States, why are American Jews, many of them, so strongly anti-Trump?
You know, it's interesting, David, because as you said that statement, I'm in chapter 4 right now of your book, and American Jews, who are they? And it's that was my very next question, as to why is it that Jewish liberals don't support Israel. You would seem it would be a natural, but it's not. They're not supporting Israel's right to exist.
Right. So I've been asked that question many times over the years in all of the places where I've spoken, and all the media that I've spoken in, and what happens is I usually give the short soundbite answer, which is that American Jews, sadly, the overwhelming majority of American Jews are disconnected from their Judaic heritage. But of course, that raises more questions, and questions such as, well, why does being disconnected from the Judaic heritage mean that they're not going to support Israel, or that they're going to vote for the Democrats and not the Republicans? Why, you know, people want more substantive answers, and I felt it was time to really research it and give them the proper answers. So what I found is that yes, Jews are disconnected from their heritage, but why? And I went into that in depth in the book about why the Jewish people in the United States, why American Jews are so disconnected from their heritage, and there are historical reasons for that that have to do with, on one hand, them being so successful financially because of a lot of hard work and education, but on the other hand, removing a lot of the Judaism and a lot of the religious connection in order to get ahead and to get ahead socially and economically.
Well, David, your book is some 225 pages. How is it our listeners can obtain a copy of Trump and the Jews?
Well, the best way to get a copy of Trump and the Jews is to go straight to Amazon and type in Trump and the Jews, David Rubin, and you'll come right up to the Trump and the Jews page on Amazon.
Okay.
And another option is to go to my website, which is davidrubinisrael.com. That's David Rubin, spelled R-U-B-I-N, davidrubinisrael.com.
Friends, again, the book is called Trump and the Jews, and you'll find he's been a president like none other here to Israel. Certainly, we see the contributions and significant contribution coming from President Truman and President Nixon, but a very fascinating look at President Trump here and the Jews. David, as we're talking about this attack upon Israel itself, is there a connection between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority?
Oh, of course. Of course there's a connection. There's a rivalry, but there is also a very strong connection. The Hamas terrorist organization they're more outwardly Islamic, let's put it that way, but the Fatah terrorists are the main terrorist force within the Palestinian Authority. The Hamas are aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood. They're actually a creation of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Fatah, while there may be Muslim fanatics, Muslim fundamentalists within the Fatah terrorist organization, they aren't outwardly seen as such, but they're no less radical. Fatah, which is the main terrorist component within the Palestinian Authority, has actually committed more terrorist attacks than the Hamas over time.
Hmm. Well, this one launched by Hamas, where does Hamas receive its funding?
Hamas receives its funding from a variety of sources, some of the Arab countries, but they receive more funding from Iran than any other source.
I saw one writer yesterday from Jerusalem Online who said the smell of war is in the air. Do you agree with that, or has that been averted now with this ceasefire?
Oh, no. The threat of war is greater than ever before. It may not happen right now. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, what the Hamas terrorists are going to do now that there is inner political turmoil in Israel. Will they take advantage of it by launching more rocket attacks? It's possible, and it could be that if they do, then Netanyahu will have to respond stronger than he's been willing to respond up to this point, and he may use it as an election propaganda tool if we do indeed go to early elections.
What reaction has come from the Trump administration?
Well, the Trump administration has been fairly quiet. There was a statement by Jason Greenblatt, who's President Trump's international envoy for negotiations, and he did make a statement that that Israel absolutely has a right to defend itself, that no other country would put up with rocket attacks on its cities without responding.
Mm-hmm. As we look forward here, it's been a horrible 48 hours with over 500 rockets descending upon Israel. Moving forward, what do you expect to happen in Gaza?
Well, at this point, we're looking at a ceasefire that is happening right now. But Israel's in turmoil. There are massive protests along the Gaza border by residents of communities that are adjacent to Gaza, Israeli communities where the people are protesting very, very vehemently, criticizing the ceasefire and criticizing the prime minister because they feel like they are being abandoned by this prime minister with the ceasefire.
Folks, again, with this hundreds of rockets falling, there has been loss of life, certainly loss of property. The Iron Dome system had stopped many of the rockets, but so many more did hit intended targets. David, you know firsthand the trauma of terror as you and your young son were wounded in a terror attack. Just briefly describe for our listeners what happened, because this goes even beyond the physical to the emotional as well.
Well, if it was only me, then it wouldn't be so important. But the reality is that what we've experienced has been experienced by thousands of Israelis. My 3-year-old son and I were wounded when we were driving back from Jerusalem 7 years ago, and the car was ambushed by terrorists from that Fatah terrorist organization of the Palestinian Authority. And the car went dead when the bullets hit. I was shot in the leg. My son was shot in the head. And the car was dead. It wasn't starting. The blood was pouring out of my leg. And finally, I got the car to start somehow, and it certainly wasn't easy. But it miraculously started and got us all the way to the next community, where we got an ambulance. The ambulance took us to the hospital. They discovered that my son had been shot in the head and that the bullet had missed his brainstem by 1 millimeter.
Mm.
Well, got to the hospital. I was pronounced the 1,000th victim of terrorism, and we went through a long recovery process. And as a result of that recovery process, we discovered that my son had been traumatized emotionally, and we started a treatment program, which ultimately led to the establishment of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, or Shiloh, Americans would say.
Mm-hmm.
Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, for the purpose of healing the trauma of the terror victim children. And we have about 2,000 children in the greater Shiloh Township and in Israel, and they're just in the biblical heartland of Israel. Shiloh, or Shiloh as we call it in Hebrew, was the first capital of ancient Israel. And that's where the tabernacle stood for 369 years. So we it's a historical place, and we have 2,000 children in the therapeutic center of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund.
Yeah, let's just pick up on that after the break. And folks, ShilohIsraelChildren.org is a website. David's going to tell us about what happens in their center, but also his book available at DavidRubinIsrael.com. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
The Bible says that life is but a vapor that's here for a short time, and then vanishes away. Scripture also says, it's appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment. Have you ever wondered what happens when you die? In the book, What Happens After Life, author Ron Rose provides a survey of the Bible's teachings about the afterlife. He tracks the destiny for those who know Christ as Savior, and the destiny for unbelievers. He addresses numerous topics, such as the immediate state after death, believers and the judgment seat of Christ, unbelievers and the great white throne judgment, the new heavens and a new earth, the new Jerusalem, and so much more. He even tackles the question of what happens to infants, young children, and those mentally disabled as it relates to eternity. What Happens After Life is available for a donation of $15 or more by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. David Rubin is with us today, the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and talking about the attack upon Israel again. Some 500 plus rockets landing upon Israel, launched against Israel from Hamas in Gaza. Some intercepted, others causing great devastation. Human life has been lost. Property severely damaged. David, I saw the one missile hit a bus. It had some news coverage or a camera on it, and it was unbelievable as you see this bus going down the road, and then all of a sudden it is just devastated by this missile going into it. It is just the realities of what's taking place there hit pretty hard.
Yes, and the key difference that a lot of the American media doesn't point out is that when there are attacks from Hamas, they are aiming specifically for civilians. They're specifically aiming at civilian targets. And occasionally they will hit a soldier accidentally, but they're mainly aiming at civilian targets. And when Israel fights back, Israel is aiming specifically only at military targets. Occasionally civilians do get hurt in war because the Hamas terrorists like to hide behind the civilians. They'll put their weapons factories in the underneath schools, in the basements of schools, and they do things like that so that when Israel finally attacks them, and a few civilians get hurt in the process, so Israel will be blamed for it.
Yeah, and you know, our media, they talked a lot about anti-Semitism when the synagogue shooting happened in Pittsburgh, but when we see this kind of act of anti-Semitism coming from Hamas, the media has been pretty moot as it relates to it.
Well, Islamic anti-Semitism very often is ignored, but the main anti-Semitism today is the anti-Semitism that comes either from the Islamo-fascists or from the far left, and there are some neo-Nazis on the far right, but they're few and far between. But the main anti-Semitism today is from the far left and the Islamo-fascists.
David, I want to approach one other issue before we open our phone lines, and that is we just had our elections here in the United States, our midterm elections, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, again, connections to Muslim Brotherhood, connections to Hamas, reported that at least 57 Muslims were elected to local, state, national positions. They also said it was a record year for Muslim involvement. What's your take, your concern, your warning regarding this?
Well, it's a big danger for the Democratic Party, and it's a big danger for America, because these are people who, these Muslim congressmen are very, very anti-America. They're against Judeo-Christian civilization, and they are in favor of changing Judeo-Christian civilization to a Muslim civilization. I can't put it any clearer than that. That is the reality. And just as Keith Ellison in Minnesota had those views, and the congresswoman who was elected in Minnesota has those views. It's a danger for America, because America is a country that is grounded in the Judeo-Christian traditions. And the civilization of freedom that the founders of the United States established, freedom, religious liberty, but it wasn't just wasn't just a general religious liberty that doesn't have any values base. It is based in the Judeo-Christian heritage.
Folks, as you know, there were two Muslim women elected to Congress, one from Michigan, one from Minnesota, that we're talking about, Rashida Tlaib and also Ilhan Omar. And according to the Washington Free Beacon, they spoke about Minnesota Democrat Ilhan Omar, who told Muslim Girl magazine that she believes and supports the BDS movement. That's the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction Israel movement, adding that she has fought to ensure others are also able to openly support the movement. She's been under fire for her harsh criticism of Israel. And folks, it's not only in opposition to our U.S. values, our U.S. laws and constitution, but she also said Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and see the evil doings of Israel. David, this is a congresswoman-elect now from Minnesota.
Yes, but she is driven by her radical Muslim ideology. She's an American citizen, but she has no loyalties to the United States. And you mentioned CAIR, C-A-I-R, the Council on America Islamic Relations. That's an organization that is anti-American. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-Jewish, and their chairman has spoken out very clearly, and as well as their public spokesman, just a few years ago, they were caught speaking in Arabic, and they said that they're not in America to help America and to help Muslims in America. They're in America to change America to an Islamic civilization. Hmm. They say it clearly to overthrow and have a jihadist revolution in the United States.
Our phone number across to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829, talking about this current attack and the continuous attacks upon Israel. Certainly comments pertaining to the Islamic advancement taking place through the elections here in the U.S. as well. Again, our number 800-733-9829. David, before our last break, we were in the midst of also talking about the Shiloh Israel's Children's Fund. Just give us a word here as well about the program that you've undertaken to help those who've been victims or traumatized by terror itself.
Well, the goal was to establish a therapeutic educational campus in which therapy and education would be integrated integrated in the healing of children who've suffered from terrorism. So we have music therapy and art therapy and therapy with animals. We have a couple of petting zoos. We have a therapeutic horse farm. And so we use all the therapies, including music, including art, including bibliotherapy and sports therapy. And all of those therapies, according to the children's needs, and we're having amazing success. We have over 2,000 children on campus, and we're building a new campus so that we'll have extra space for these therapies. And in addition to that, the children they go through a regular day of learning, a regular day of education, but it's all integrated together, the therapy and the music and the education. It's all integrated together. So we're having tremendous success in healing the trauma of terrorism and restoring some of the lost innocence of childhood for thousands of children.
Folks, the website is ShilohIsraelChildren.org, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. And again, to obtain David's book, Trump and the Jews, his website, davidrubinisrael.com. Rubin is spelled R-U-B-I-N, davidrubinisrael.com. Taking your calls here on Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Fred is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Fred, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to say shalom aleichem and also that I hope that America as well as Israel would have 57 nuclear warheads pointed at 57 capitals of Islamic countries so that they can hold them at bay or take them out and would lessen the threat against all of us.
Well, we certainly need to have not just the weapons, but the will to be able to use the weapons that are necessary for each particular task. Mm-hmm. And obviously, nobody wants to get into a nuclear war with anybody. But even with conventional weapons, you need to have the wisdom to know when to use those weapons and the will to use them and use them forcefully when needed.
Thank you, Fred, for the call. David, is Israel's response with this ceasefire, I mean, here we have Hamas putting hundreds of rockets in. Israel has some retaliation here. But does Hamas view this as a sign of weakness from Israel, basically allowing them to reload and replan so they can launch the next attack?
Oh, sure. Once the ceasefire was reached, the celebrations began in Gaza. The Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, they're celebrating victory. They view it as a victory. They see that Netanyahu does not have the will to go forward. And I know that when Netanyahu speaks in America, he speaks very strongly, and he has the impression of being a very strong leader. But when it comes to these conflicts, he doesn't seem to have the will to go forward. And I think that Lieberman, the defense minister, and Bennett, the leader of the Jewish Home Party, were absolutely correct in calling for stronger action by the Israeli government in supporting the Israeli defense forces and going ahead with a full scale operation. That's the only way it's going to stop. Hamas may ease off for a couple of months, but then they'll just view it as a time to refuel and they will go forward with launching more rockets a couple of months from now. Unless Israel puts a real stop to it, goes in forcefully, takes away their weapons, and this is something that can be done and should be done.
Marilyn is our next caller from Casper, Wyoming. Hi, Marilyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to comment about, I did hear on the news that one of hit two women and a man, and it happened to be a Palestinian sitting at a table in Israel. You know, their rocket went over there and did that. And I wanted to say, is Joe Lieberman any relation to the Lieberman you're talking about there?
No. Lieberman is actually a very common Jewish name. I think I would have known if there was a relation. No, there is no relation between the two.
Christian. Mm-hmm. So there is hope, too. You know, even praise God for the, you know, the word will not return void.
Thank you, Marilyn. Appreciate
you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
the call. We're just seconds away from the break, so we'll pick up our next calls right after the break. David Rubin is our guest today here in Crosstalk. Again, Israel attacked again, had some response, but has stopped that response to bring about a ceasefire. And this morning, Israel's defense minister resigned out of protest regarding not being able to move forward in ultimate protection against Israel. David Rubin with us here today. Again, his websites are ShilohIsraelChildren.org, and his book is called Trump and the Jews, and that's available at DavidRubinIsrael.com. We're back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in a Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is WorldviewRadio.com. An EMP attack could put a nation in complete darkness, shutting down their power grid and all their critical infrastructure. In fact, congressional studies by scientists reveal that 90% of Americans would be dead within 1 year if an EMP attack were successfully carried out from coast to coast in America by a nuclear weapon being detonated above the United States of America, creating an EMP effect. Right now, we know for a matter of fact that North Korea and Iran have super EMP. What's also interesting is the nations that have protected against EMP are in the process of doing so include Russia, China, North Korea, South Korea, the United Kingdom, Israel, and Taiwan. What do all those nations have in common? Almost all of them are mentioned in Bible prophecy. Those are the nations listed in the scriptures that will be here for the end times. America is not listed. Has America been taken out by an EMP while those nations had protected their critical infrastructure?
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, speaking today with David Rubin, Israel Our Focus. We're going right back to the phone lines. We have Kevin calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
How you doing, Jim?
Fine.
You'll have to forgive me. I've been coming down with a cold.
Okay.
Is the book in Braille so I can read it?
Not yet.
Not yet, Kevin.
Oh.
Thank you so much. Mingo from Rio Grande Valley, Texas, you're on the air.
Yeah. Brother Jim, nice talking to you. And David, I'm going to see if I can buy the book here in the Rio Grande Valley. Maybe it'll come this way. But anyway, I just wanted to comment, Brother Jim, that if you remember before, President Trump even made that call on Jerusalem, to be on Israel, to be Jerusalem, the capital.
Yes.
I've always said that Trump has always supported the Jewish people. And up to now, he has done fantastic. And we love the way our president is supporting Israel. The other thing, Jim, that I wanted to comment on quickly, because I know you've got other people holding, is that I was going to tell David, you mentioned that some of the Jews in New York and in the United States don't support Trump. Remember 2,000 years ago, David, Christ came into the world, and yet the Jews there chose Barabbas instead of Jesus. So, it's been that way since 2,000 years, and I hope that, and we pray for the nation of Israel, that they can put their eyes on the Lord Jesus Christ and they can come to know Christ as their personal Savior, because this is what we stand for, America. That's why we are called Christians here in America, David. And thank you very much, David, for your book and all that. We're going to try to buy it, like I say, and we're going to try to advertise it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mingo, for the call here today. David, one of the points he also brought out was about the move of the U.S. Embassy to Israel. And there is another shock that happened in the election recently, and that's in the nation of Brazil with the new president, Jair Bolsonaro, who is also talking about moving their embassy to Jerusalem as well.
Well, there has been encouragement. There are other countries that have been considering moving their embassies, and they may go forward and do it. It's just a matter of following the lead of the American president.
Mm-hmm. We've got Mac calling from Midway, Florida. Hi, Mac. You're on the air.
Hi, Brother Jim. I appreciate this topic today. I have kind of like one statement and a question for Mr. Rubin. It strikes me that the Iron Dome that he mentioned earlier, we once supported here on the Gulf Coast, we supported helping with financial aid for those shelters that were put up. And I'm wondering if these are kind of like the same thing, or are they even better? Because at the time they mentioned that the shelters only housed comfortably like 8 or 10 people if people pushed into it. And my other comment, too, is the fact that it strikes a lot of us here on the Gulf Coast, of how much support we're lacking in what we could give Israel, not only in prayers, but also in financial aid. So if that website has other, has other pull downs on it for other types of financial support, we'd like to know about that too.
Okay.
And thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mac. Your response, David?
Okay, well, first of all, the website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, gives a variety, it tells about all our projects, And the projects aren't specifically in the security realm. They are more in the realm of helping children and developing the biblical heartland of Israel through the children. And that has political ramifications. That's obviously going to make a difference as far as Israel's retention of Judea and Samaria, the so-called West Bank. So you're not only helping children, but you're helping the rebuilding of Israel when you support the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. A word about what is the Iron Dome that we refer to?
Ah, okay. So the Iron Dome is a defensive system. It's an anti-rocket system whereby Israel can pick off rockets in midair before they reach their targets. And it's actually been very successful. It's certainly more successful than bomb shelters, because bomb shelters wait until the rockets land. But the best defense, as I explained in my book, Trump and the Jews, in detail, the best defense is a good offense. Hmm.
Jeff is next. Hi, Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the topic today. I just wanted to ask Mr. Rubin about Netanyahu's decision, if he thought maybe it was, his decision was based on maybe he knew, like, what was going to happen. Like, is there, like, a baiting tactic? I mean, we see it all the time over here with Trump, the press and everybody. They bait Trump, then they get the response they're looking for, they film it, and then bam, you know, that's just, that's what they show. And then, you know, he's the bad guy. But I just wonder if you thought maybe that was maybe part of the reason why Netanyahu made the decision that he made. And that's all I wanted to ask. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, I wish I could rationalize it in that way. The reality is that in all of his years as prime minister, Netanyahu has not had one very successful war. And, you know, in Israel, unfortunately, we have wars every 2 to 3 years recently in the past decade. And the reason for that is that we have not won any war decisively since the Six-Day War. And when you don't win a war decisively and you agree to a ceasefire after several days, you are not going to win the war decisively, then it just encourages the enemy to attack more. Hmm.
Thank you. And we all have time for a quick call or comment. Ann in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yes, how do you do? I wanted to make to ask, in your assessment of the U.S. Jews and why they don't support Israel in a way that one would think, and they always go with the Democratic Party.
Please, write with your question.
Do you think that it's just guilt? Like, there's white guilt in the Democratic Party.
Okay, I tell you what, David, you got 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Yes, if you the Jews that are connected to their heritage, and which is mainly the Orthodox Jews in America, tend to vote Republican and tend to support Trump and tend to support Israel.
Thank you. We're out of time. David's website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, DavidRubinIsrael.com. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from CrosstalkAmerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.